Hello and welcome back to the Arena Podcast by Coffin Fellows, where we dive deep into the stories of some of the most fabled names in venture capital and startups around the world. This podcast is hosted by Jeff Herbach, the CEO of Coffin Fellows, and produced by me, Nihar Nilakanti. Joining us in today's episode is Santi Subotovsky, partner at Emergence Capital. Listen in as Jeff and Santi discuss the success of Zoom, Irrational Obsession, and Santi's journey immigrating from Argentina to becoming a partner at one of Silicon Valley's most successful venture funds. Let's get to it.
You're now in the arena.
All right, welcome back to the Arena Podcast. We're excited today to talk to Santi Subotovsky at Emergence Partners. Santi, say hi.
Hey, Jeff. Thanks very much for having me here.
It's really a pleasure to do this with you. I'm excited to get into some of the things that are with your background. So first, Santi, I want to do a little bragging about you. The first time that we ever met, actually, I don't know if you remember this, but the first time we ever met was I was a finalist trying to get into the Coffin program, and you came and talked to the finalists, and you basically told us, here's what it takes to get into venture. I was not currently in venture. I was just hoping to get a spot. And you gave us me in a classroom of about 30 other finalists, this big pump-up talk of all the things we need to do to get into venture. Do you remember that? It was at the Coffin Fellows offices. And I left that thinking, holy cow, that guy is driven. That guy is going to make something of himself. I left really impressed.
And then I disappointed you.
And you've been fantastic ever since. So Santi, what we want to jump into, and what I want to jump into in a conversation with you is you've made an investment in a company called Zoom. Zoom is one of the fastest growing SaaS companies out there. It's been very successful. We use Zoom for everything we do in Coffin Fellows. Tell me a little bit about how you met them. You know, what was that like when you first interacted with Eric?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, it's been a 4-year journey so far, but it started even before we met Eric. It came out of a personal frustration. I'm originally from Argentina. I have friends in Latin America. And whenever I try to stay in touch with my friends and family, I came out of all those conversations extremely frustrated, and even more than frustrated, irritated, because the technology wasn't working. My wife lived in Nairobi, Kenya for a while. And when we were trying to stay in touch, it was really bad. The technology didn't work. So I knew there was going to be something better that was going to help people stay closer. And when I joined Emergence in 2010, we started looking for a next-gen collaboration technology. We talked to a lot of companies, and it took us 4 years to come across Zoom. And before meeting Eric, what I did is I tried the technology and I sent it out to family members in Argentina to try to communicate with them. And first of all, they were able to download, install, and making it work, even though they didn't speak English and the product was just in English. And then when we connected, it just worked. It was incredible. It was day and night compared to other products. So that's when we reached out to Eric, because we didn't know anything about this company Zoom. It just was a product, it was working, and we wanted to learn more. And I remember my first conversation with Eric, it was over Zoom, and he was trying to convince us to deploy Zoom in the office. And at that time, we had Skype cameras. There were some cameras with built-in Skype, were very clunky, they never worked. But I told him, yeah, we want to replace what we have with Zoom. And that's how we started the conversation. It was less about, oh, we want to invest in your company. It's more about, love your product. We need it. It's going to solve a big problem that we have here at Emergence.
So that's an awesome story. You basically came into Emergence with this thesis, I want to figure out how to better help people connect and communicate. Is that right?
I think early on, it was less of a thesis and more of a personal frustration.
Yeah.
And then it evolved into a thesis. And as we saw companies like Yammer get into this next-gen collaboration, we learned a lot. And then we formed this thesis where we believed that there was going to be a better way to stay in touch and communicate with people.
Amazing. And So now, fast forward another, you know, from 2010 to 2014, you're looking for this next-gen collaboration tool. 2014 to now 2018, where you're an investor, board member. What's that journey been like over the last 4 years with Zoom? How have you seen the product evolve? Have you seen it continue to get great? And well, let me start there.
It's been an incredible journey. I mean, I tell Eric and the Zoom team, I'm honored to be part of that journey. It's a lot of fun. I get a ton of energy. And that energy comes from hearing how customers are using it. It's less about, oh, the company is doing really well and financials are strong and we're releasing new products. That's more of the tactical stuff. But I think what drives me and what drives the Zoom team is the fact that we're making people's lives better. And we hear that all the time. Sometimes I wear a Zoom vest that they gave me a few years ago, and I get stopped on the street. It's like, oh, you work for Zoom. That's amazing. I use it on my personal life, on my professional life. It just works. And hearing that from people is really inspiring.
That's incredible. And with Eric, is what's been some of the, have there been any things that have surprised you over this journey with getting to know Eric better, with your relationship? I mean, every entrepreneurial journey has peaks and valleys, ups and downs. What's that roller coaster ride been like for you over the last 4 years with Zoom?
So over the last 4 years, I've gotten to know Eric really well and the entire executive team. I spend time with Greg, Janine, Odette, Kelly, Aparna. So I spend time with the entire executive team. And the connective tissue there is that everyone is working really hard because they believe in what they're doing. They believe in the ultimate mission. And over time, what I noticed is that Eric likes to build, it's more than partnerships, it's friendships. He wants to be your friend. He wants to build that trust because he truly believes in that foundation of trust enabling you to move faster as a company. If you have that trust layer, then you don't need to be reading between the lines and trying to figure out what the agendas are. Everyone's pushing in the same direction. And that's how Eric built a company. And that's how we as board members are building a relationship with the company and with the customers.
That's really healthy. I love that. So Santi, let's now dig in a little bit more with you. So tell me, let's kind of rewind the tape a little bit. Let's do a flashback. Tell me a little bit about your childhood, your upbringing. What were some of the formative experiences for you that brought you to early childhood Santi up to Santi today?
Oh, you're taking me back in time now. Born and raised in Argentina, very strong family. So we spent a lot of time with family members and friends. It's very Latin in terms of the amount of time we spend with people we like and how we focus on building strong relationships. It's less about the transaction and it's more about that long-term relationship. Both my parents passed away when I was young, so I had to deal with a lot of hardship early on in my life, but I think that made me stronger. My dad was an entrepreneur himself, a failed startup, and I learned from that. He was passionate about what he was doing. Things didn't work out, but that didn't scare me because he was happy doing what he was doing while things worked out. And then when I graduated from college, I couldn't get a job. Argentina was going through a major financial crisis, couldn't get a job. And instead of calling myself unemployed, I decided to start a company with my best friend. We didn't get into the startup world or entrepreneurship because we were in Silicon Valley. In Argentina, it's very rare, but we got into the startup world because we couldn't find jobs that were exciting enough. And we had to pivot a lot. We were close to shutting down the business multiple times, and we kept going. And that's how I ended up here in the US. So instead of shutting down the company when Argentina went through another major financial crisis, we ended up moving to the US and trying to see if we could sell our software here. Things started working out. We built a company. It was an e-learning company. And then we got involved with an organization called Endeavor. And they introduced us to Silicon Valley. I remember they invited us to Silicon Valley back in 2006. And that's when I discovered this startup ecosystem. And I said, okay, I need to learn more about venture capital. And that's when I committed to moving out to California and learning about venture capital.
Because you were in Florida at the time, is that right?
I was in DC. I spent a year in Miami, Florida. Then I moved to DC because we were doing a lot of government contracts with my company, and that's where I was running the company. I was going back and forth between DC and Buenos Aires. And when I discovered California, I just was very curious to learn more about how things were being done here.
And so what was that like, coming from Argentina to going through being a startup guy, going to, you know, being in Miami and then DC and then moving out to the Valley? Was that culture shock to you? Was that, oh my gosh, I finally found my people? What was that?
It was a huge culture shock. My entire journey was not easy, but it was fascinating, because when we were in DC, and this is probably very East Coast, I remember meeting people and everyone wanted to know, so what do your parents do? Where's your family from? And when I moved here to California, nobody asked me anything about my family. They asked me about me. What are you working on? What gets you excited? And that made me feel really well. So I really enjoyed that. But I also was in shock, because when I moved here with my wife, we both moved out without jobs. And we couldn't afford anything. As you know, real estate prices are not...
They're not cheap.
Yeah, they're not cheap. And everyone was telling me, oh, you need to be in Palo Alto, because that's a place where everyone is and you need to find a place. We couldn't afford anything in Palo Alto. And I remember my wife had to go to Argentina to visit her mom. And I kept on looking around for places. And I remember one day calling her and telling her, I found a place in Palo Alto. It's great. We can get on this month-to-month rental, so we don't have to put in a huge deposit. Little did I know that it was East Palo Alto. So my first place here in the Bay Area was in East Palo Alto, an inflatable mattress in a tiny apartment, and trying to find a job. And we've come a long way, but I never forget where we started.
And rewinding back a little bit here, so something that you said resonated with me, in that both your parents passed away at a young age, both of my parents passed away at a young age, and that was a formative experience for me, some in the positive, some in the negative. Here you are now taking a startup from Argentina to moving to the States to Miami to DC, now living, sleeping on a blow-up mattress in East Palo Alto. How do you think that experience with your parents passing away at a young age and what that did to you as a formative experience, how did that now direct what you were doing and being this, being in a new place, looking for a new job, kind of doing these things?
I think, of course, it was tough, but ultimately, I think it made me who I am. And
how so?
It helped me not take stuff for granted and know that it's up to me to get things done. I can't blame my parents, I can't blame my school, I can't blame my friends, because when they passed away, I had to take care of a lot of stuff that I had no idea how to do. But I had to do it because I didn't have my dad or my mom to do it. And that was very formative. And I think it also helps me a lot when I'm talking to entrepreneurs, because when you're an entrepreneur, you don't have your boss helping you out and telling you this is what you need to do. It's 100% up to you. Yeah. You control your own destiny. And there's going to be a lot of people who are going to tell you it can't be done. It's really hard. Incumbents and new startups and funding. But if you're obsessed with that opportunity, it's almost like that irrational obsession, you're going to get it done. And you're going to run through walls and you're just going to make things happen. I feel that a lot of entrepreneurs want to become entrepreneurs, but don't understand, to your earlier point, that it's going to be a journey, and it's going to have a lot of ups and downs. And if you don't come in with the right mentality, then when things are tough, you're just going to give up and join one of the big companies. The true entrepreneurs who end up succeeding are the ones who can handle those tough times. Because believe me, every entrepreneur, every company is going to face some tough times at some point in life.
Absolutely. The heroes in our story are truly the entrepreneurs. But as we say in this podcast, there's an entrepreneur's journey in each one of us, and certainly in every Coffin Fellow. And so for you, I love this idea that what you learned and the formative experiences that you had gave you this irrational kind of obsession or this tenacity. How'd you apply that to your next gig? So now you're here in East Palo Alto. What'd you do next?
What I did is what I did with my startup. I started cold calling people and trying to sell a product. And that product was me. I was a product. And early on, I remember this very clearly. I got a lot of no's because people were less politically correct when I got into venture. And I would get emails and people saying there are no Latinos in venture. It's not for Latinos. You should try to do something else. And actually, I got a lot more energy from that because I got that feeling that I want to prove you wrong. And that's where the Kaufman Fellows were extremely helpful. And I always talk about this. When I moved here, I met Phil, who was running the Kaufman Fellows back then.
Phil Wickham.
Phil Wickham, yeah. And he was super helpful. I graduated from business school. So after selling my company, I went to business school for 2 years, graduated in 2009, which was not another great year to find a job because we were going through some changes here in the US. And I remember talking to Phil and telling Phil, look, what I want to do is I want to get into venture. I'm committed to getting into venture. I got into the program. I became a finalist, but I didn't have a job. And what I also wanted to do is I wanted to travel with my wife because we didn't have kids back then. And I knew that this was going to be my last opportunity to take real time off and travel. And a lot of my classmates in business school were telling me, oh, you're going to fall behind if you don't get a job right now. Then that's going to affect your career path. And Phil pulled me aside and said, look, you're going to be working for the rest of your life. If you take 6 months off, it's not going to matter. Do what you feel is right. And I did that. And it was probably one of the best decisions ever because it helped me build a much stronger relationship with my wife and develop more conviction about what I wanted to do. So even though I got a job probably 6 months later compared to my classmates from business school, I mean, who cares now? Yeah. And then I met the emergence team at a Kaufman cocktail. I remember having a conversation with Kevin Spain, who's now a general partner here. And Kevin was telling me about enterprise investing and the Kaufman Fellowship. We connected there, and that ended up converging into me being offered a job here at Emergence. So for me, it was more about that early advice that I got from Phil than the actual connection with Kevin at Emergence, which ended up leading me to a job here. And then after I joined Emergence, I had a great group of people helping me think through the journey. Because when I think about my journey in venture, I can divide it in like 2 year buckets. My first 2 years were more about, I don't know anything about venture. There's no venture in Latin America. I want to learn about venture. Is it something that I'm interested in doing, or I just want to learn how people make decisions and then start a company and raise venture capital money? And the first 2 years, I got a lot of help from my Kaufman cohort, helping me figure out that I really loved venture. Then next 2 years were more about, am I any good at this? And you know, venture is a tough job because it takes a long time to get to those results. When I was running my company, I had immediate feedback. It's whatever I did had positive or negative impact right away. In venture, you don't. But what I realized those next 2 years was more about, I don't suck at it. I can build relationship with entrepreneurs. I can partner with them. I can help them out. And the next 2 years were more about, okay, I love venture. I don't suck at it. Where do I want to build my long-term career? And that's when, again, the Kaufman Fellows were extremely helpful because people had gone through that path. So I had a lot of conversations, not only with people here at Emergence, but with people at other firms who helped me figure out that Emergence was the right firm for me. So, I mean, I wouldn't be here without the Kaufman Fellowship.
That's awesome. How many meetings did you take to get to your final?
So my CRM had me tracking 77 companies, 77 venture firms when I moved here in 2010. And I knew that I only needed one good firm. So I just treated it as a sales pipeline. It's like how many first meetings, how many second meetings, how to work your influencer network. And that worked out.
Back to that irrational obsession or that tenacity. Yeah.
And if you think about it, it's not that different to what we do here in venture every day. We're out there selling. We're out there talking to the best entrepreneurs and convincing them that we're the right partners for them. We're talking to the best LPs, convincing them that we're the right partners to help them generate returns. We're talking to great candidates in the industry, convincing them to join our companies. And then we're convincing great people to join our firm as well.
Exactly.
So it's all about sales and relationships, and not only converting, but also delivering on that promise. If I'm going to invest in a company and partner with an entrepreneur, then I need to deliver. If I'm going to get a new LP, I need to deliver returns.
I love that. I love your journey here. So, and when you started Emergence, what was the title that you started at?
I started as a senior associate.
Yeah.
And I was doing, I think I was the most junior person on the investment team. And that's something else that I share with a lot of people, because everyone's obsessed with titles. Oh, are you a partner? Are you an associate? Are you a principal? I don't think that matters. It doesn't matter what your title is. You need to come in with that mentality that you need to get things done. And as a senior associate, I felt that allowed me to work with a lot of people in the firm, build very strong relationships. And my job was not, I wasn't following the job description. I knew there was stuff that I needed to get done, but then I also knew that I wanted to be a partner long term. So as a senior associate, I was acting like a partner whenever I had time.
Long-term game.
It's a long-term game. So I remember I had other classmates who joined other firms as principals, partners, so you name it, and they were looking down on me. It's like, oh, you're joining as a senior associate after running a company, so what's wrong with you? And now I'm one of the few who are still in venture.
Yeah.
So it's that long-term view on whatever you want to do. And then that idea that you need to love what you're doing. Venture is a marathon, it's not a sprint. So if you're not enjoying the ride, then go do something else.
You know what I love about your story, Santi, is that you went through your own ups and downs, your own hardships. Certainly you were given lots of different opportunities to kind of say, look, this just isn't for me, this is too hard. I mean, I'm not sure how many people are willing to take 77, you know, track 77 different meetings in venture to take all those meetings it takes to actually get in. But that irrational obsession, that tenacity brought you to what we believe and what we now know is one of the best venture firms in the world. And it gave you a place where you could place that tenacity and that irrational obsession into what you do and learn. And you start as a senior associate, now you're a general partner at Emergence. And along the way, where, you know, what was your title when you invested in Zoom?
I don't know. It could have been
principal
maybe. Yeah. And Eric didn't care.
Yeah.
Eric didn't care about the title. Eric cared about the people.
What's awesome about Eric and both of your stories, both immigrants, Eric actually has this this story about how he applied for a visa, you know, 9 times, I think, and didn't get it till his 9th time. I mean, that's tenacity. That's irrational obsession. So here are two individuals that are coming from immigrant backgrounds, coming to the U.S., building their own, you know, kind of journeys here, both with this massive obsession and tenacity in doing what they're doing, and you two find each other.
Yeah, and we bonded a lot over that. I also had my issues with immigration because I'm not a U.S. citizen. So I had to apply for visas. I had to renew them. I mean, I remember at a point I was traveling with my wife outside of the country, came back to the U.S., and I had a letter saying that I had 30 days to leave the country because of some paperwork that never got processed. And I was kind of, okay, we're just going to figure this out. And we did. And we showed up and we told our story. And we were there at one of those immigration centers for, I think, 6 hours waiting to get someone to talk to us.
Wow.
And yeah, it's, I mean, I think that's what also makes it fun. And that's what also drives a lot of people. So I'm going to do what I know can be done, even if you have a lot of people telling you it's not going to happen. Most successful entrepreneurs have a bunch of people telling them what you're doing is stupid, it's never going to work, you're never going to be able to raise capital, but they have that irrational obsession, they're going to get it done. And then people say, oh, now it's obvious. So now everyone wants to invest in the company. But those early days when you're starting a company or when we invest in people, it's not obvious. We're taking a big risk and we focus a lot on getting to know why people are doing what they're doing. Yeah. Are they starting a company because it's cool? Are they starting a company because their friends started companies? Or are they starting a company because they want to fix something that they know needs to get fixed?
I love that. Tell me about, for your journey, tell me, Santi, about some of the hardships or maybe one particular mistake that you made. I mean, as we look at your successes, you've been an investor in lots of great companies. You're an investor not only in Zoom, but also in Crunchbase and Civitas Learning, Restaurando, Top Hat, Zappo, High Alpha, lots of great companies. And you're with a great firm that's been largely very, very successful. Tell me about something that was hard or something that you did that was that you felt like was a big mistake, or maybe if you had it to do it over, you would have done it differently. And what did you learn from that being here at Emergence?
So early on, when I was looking at companies, I try to follow a process. And here at Emergence, given that we're all focused on cloud investments, we all make decisions as a group. We have this bar we call unanimous enthusiasm, where everyone gets involved in the decision-making process. So every general partner is calling customer references, every general partner is meeting with the team, is calling management references. So by the time we're making a decision, we're all making decisions as a group. And that helps a lot, because then if the companies do really well, it's an Emergence win. And if they don't do that well, then we all learn as a group and we avoid the finger pointing of, oh, I told you, I was not supportive of that investment. And early on, I didn't know that and I didn't get full appreciation of that. And I was trying to push really hard without bringing the team along. And I missed on some opportunities because I wasn't able to build that unanimous enthusiasm. I felt that, oh, if I can see the play here, then I'm just going to pound the table and get things done. And even though I was frustrated when I couldn't get things done, I felt it was more my failure, because the way we do things is the way that we're going to sustainably grow and support our entrepreneurs. Because if we get to that level of unanimous enthusiasm, then every entrepreneur is going to get everyone from Emergence supportive and helping them out. And that's incredibly valuable. So you don't just have one partner focus on enterprise cloud, then others focus on consumer and something else. You don't have that tug of war. You have the entire team. And it took me a while, because as I talked to a lot of people in venture, and you probably know this, most venture firms don't operate that way. They have individual partners focusing on different themes. So they're running like multiple shops within a venture firm. We don't do that. So I was learning from those experiences, and I thought, oh, I just need to build my own franchise within Emergence. And now, looking at how we do things, I feel this is the right thing, but it takes a lot more effort. You need to bring everyone along.
That was a long journey for you to get to that point. But boy, I'm so proud of the work that you've done there. Tell me, what would you say to some of the, you know, we work in an industry that is still struggling to find its way with diversity and with inclusion, and thinking about immigrants as founders, immigrants as VCs. Here you are, you know, a Latino man investing in great companies. What advice, or what would you tell some of those other individuals that are seeking for roles in venture or in innovation and entrepreneurship that are maybe feeling like they're on the outside looking in and need some help getting in?
So what I used when I was looking for a job, even though I knew I was part of a minority, I didn't use that as a way to get into the market. What I used was more my diversity when it comes to a different experience. And that's what I think this industry also needs a lot of, is people who experience different things, because those people are going to see different opportunities. And that's what's going to help you get into those outliers. Because if everyone's been through the same experiences, same schools, same colleges, same companies, they're going to have pretty similar views on where the world is going. And sometimes you need that disruptor who comes with a crazy idea, because that's where the world might go. And if you think about all the technology and innovation we're seeing, people leapfrogging from desktop computers to mobile devices, and not going through a lot of these changes that we had to go through, I mean, those experiences are great. So if you think about how people use technology in emerging markets, they're all using mobile technology. They're all using phones and tablets. And those productivity, next-gen productivity applications are going to be designed for those environments. So someone who had that experience growing up is going to figure out that there's a new opportunity. I'll give you an example. I remember growing up, going to school, my parents would give me money in the morning to buy my lunch. And they would emphasize every day, as soon as you get to school, buy your lunch, because by noon, you're not going to be able to afford it, given inflation rate.
Wow.
And I mean, for me, that was second nature. So now thinking about the need for a new financial system in emerging markets, it's kind of, yeah, we need something better. But here in the US, you're not going to see that, because everything works kind of okay. So that diversity when it comes to experiences is what's going to make firms better. So I'm excited that I'm starting to see a trend, and people are embracing diversity and they're setting goals, but we're still not there. We still need to do a lot more work.
Boy, I love that perspective. That's really powerful. Thank you for sharing that, Santi. Last question for you before we go into some rapid fire. What has, you talked a lot about Coffin Fellows and the role that it's played, but what has Coffin Fellows meant to you or mean to you still today?
It's mentors, advisory, personal advisory board. I know that I can go to anyone and the Kauffman Fellowship, and I'm gonna get the real advice. It's not gonna be, oh, I'm trying to steer you in one direction or another. And that's incredibly valuable. If you think about entrepreneurs, that's what a lot of entrepreneurs need. They need a trusted group of advisors who have their best interests in mind. So for me, that's what the Kauffman Fellowship is all about.
Awesome. Some quick rapid fire questions for you, Santi. This has been an incredible conversation. I don't know if you can do this quickly, but let's see. Business communications, where's the market headed?
Market is heading to video first. I feel that early on, we had a lot of face-to-face interactions. That's how things got done. Then we moved to technology and we had voice. And we had text because video wasn't there. What I believe in the next 10 years, we're going to go back to face-to-face mediated by technology.
Scooters, are you bull or bear?
A bull.
Awesome. And if you had a genie in a bottle, what would your one wish be?
This is very personal, but I would have a conversation with my parents and tell them that they did the right thing.
Oh, man. That's incredible. In what way?
And the way that they, I mean, they helped me grow up focusing on the right thing. So growing up, at one point I had everything, then I lost everything, and that ultimately didn't matter. What mattered was more of the values, the drive, and that's really hard. And sometimes people get too tied up into, oh, you need this car, this laptop, this phone, this whatever. That doesn't make who you are. What makes who you are is, I mean, the relationships, your values. And I want to tell my parents, I would love to tell my parents that even though we lost everything, we never lost our integrity and we never lost the drive that got me to where I am.
Amazing. Amazing. Thank you for sharing that. I think we could do a whole other podcast just on that, Santi. But I can say with some pretty strong confidence that your parents and those that know you, me included, are very proud of what you've done, what you've become, and what you continue to do in the entrepreneurs that you serve and the people that you influence and the relationships that you build. So this has been an awesome conversation with Santi Subotosky, general partner at Emergence Capital Partners. Santi, thanks a ton for being here.
Hey listeners, we hope you enjoyed this podcast with Santi. As always, you can get notified of the latest Arena podcast release through our newsletter, which you can sign up for by clicking in the link in our bio or on our Twitter at Coffin Fellows. If you liked this episode as much as we did, we invite you to share the Arena with your friends and on social media. That's all for now. We'll see you next week.